accession number 6912, reel number 2.
Mr. Thorne, reel 2.
As I was saying, the Brigadier Foulkes was a very efficient brigadier. He wouldn't put up with any inefficiency. And after the attack on Afmadu, he got rid of at least three senior officers. And the joke was at the time that one of them formed in Nairobi a bogus club called the Left Ear Club, and the first one he started it off, and the second chap, who may have been the CRA, he came and said, "Can I join?" And he said, "Yes, why do you want to join?" He said, "Well, I've been fooked." So he said, "Right, you can join." "So have I, I've been fooked." So in due time another senior officer said, "Can I join, because I've been fooked?" So they said, "Oh yes, you can join." And then finally, and a lot later, a funny little man came and they said, "Well, what do you want to join, Paul?" He said, "Well," he said, "I fooked myself." And that was a story that gave quite a lot of amusement to the junior people like myself.
So where did you go to after British Somaliland?
Well, we advanced. The object was to take Addis Ababa, we went through the Marda Pass up through Harar, and Diridar, I think. And we only got caught once in the first six at the Awash River. The 5th KR took that by a frontal attack, and a chap named 2nd Lieutenant Howard of the Royal Scots Fusiliers, he got a military cross there, which he well deserved. The Awash is a very fast-flowing river, and he just went straight across and took it, took the other side, and we all got across because the bridges had been blown. The Italians were very good at blowing bridges. And we were advancing in lorries along some kind of road at a place called Arba. And the Italians opened up on us. A company, which I was in, was leading. And, of course, we got out of the... We debussed with the utmost speed, and we had a drill for doing this, and immediately went into the attack. And we were told to halt and so on, and the Italians had got our range. And I was with my British platoon sergeant on the forward face of a hill, and there was a distance of about a yard between us, and a shell landed not far away and blew a boulder, which would have smashed anybody's head to pieces, between us, and that was a very lucky escape. We pushed them out from wherever they were. I didn't personally see any Italians, I remember getting an absolute first-class rocket from George Robson, my company commander, because I looted a bag of sugar. And you may know that Africans love sugar. They like very sweet tea. And I thought nobody was looking, and got a couple of Africans to go to this disabled Italian lorry and whiff this bag of sugar, you see. Well, I stopped, quite rightly so, a first-class rocket from George Robson, and the only penalty that I suffered from it was that the sugar had to be shared amongst the battalion and not amongst the company, and not with my platoon only. and we halted for the night. A rather interesting thing there. it's always a policy of infantry to hold any high ground. It's even a junior subaltern knows that one, but you've got to be a bit careful in that part of Abyssinia, because a lot of the high ground is iron, and you get thunderstorms and so on and so forth, and of course you could very easily be struck by lightning, and you had to watch that. And I remember being on a piece of high ground like that, and very quickly got off it when I could see what it was and look for something else. It's only a small point, but
was anybody struck, to your
knowledge? No, we suffered no casualties. The officers, the company officers and everybody, but they were absolutely first class. As I say in my my information there that I sent you, we reckon we had about 6 black tribes and 5 white. We had South Africans, Southern Rhodesians, Kenya settlers, colonial government officials who are perhaps the very, very good indeed, perhaps the best of the lot, regular officers and odds and ends like myself from this country. And they made an absolute first-class mixture, the regulars, with one or two notable exceptions, were fantastically efficient. Really professional soldiers.
Was there any problem at all with any of these different groups mixing together?
No, none at all. They treated you very fairly, and if you did anything wrong, you were told about it in no uncertain terms. I didn't measure up to my company commander's standards, and he knocked hell out of me, and quite rightly so. In fact, I'm in touch with him now. I saw him the other day, actually, and I wouldn't have been decorated if I hadn't learnt what I should have learnt from him. The main thing is that you're told to do a thing, you do it, and that's the. And if you do it until you can't do it, go on, until you're either dead or so incapable that you can't. You can't carry out your orders any further.
What happened after this ambush at Arba?
Well, we just pressed on, and then we negotiated, or somebody negotiated, presumably Fuchs negotiated with who was ever in the Italian commander in Addis Ababa, for it to be an open town. Of course, we were all keen to get into it, and first, and A Company, the first 6 KR, plus one or two other people, got into Addis Ababa in the first column. We were first into Addis Ababa. We didn't do any fighting. We took up a position on the very fine aerodrome, and 1,500 fully armed Italian Air Force people surrendered to us, and we didn't even bother to get out of our lorries. That was our respect for the Italians.
Can you give your impression of Addis Ababa when you first went into it?
Yes, it was. The Italians had done a good job. They kind of civilized it, and they lived very well. The Abyssinians, who to my mind are ghastly people, they haven't anything to recommend them. They're nothing like our Africans. They were dreadful people, and I make no bones about it, we went looking for loot. And if you went looking for loot, you didn't go on your own. You took an armed party with you, because if you met any Abyssinians, they'd most likely fight you for it. So we were quite prepared to do that. And it was, of course, against the King's regulations and so on and so forth. But when you're in the leading infantry, you don't take too much notice of what King's regulations say. And I can't think what I looted. I didn't loot anything there of a merit, but yes, Africans got a lot of bits of bogus stuff that they liked and so on and so forth.
What did you expect to find?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. We just went having a look round, really, when we got a bit of time off. And it was Addis is quite a nice place. It's quite high. It's about 7,000 feet high, and it's full of eucalyptus trees that give you shade and so on. Not a bad town at all. As I say, the only trouble with it is full of Abyssinians.
So were you going round to the Italian dwellings?
Oh yes, yes. The where the Italians, the Italian messes and so on and so forth, they were all being pushed back to, into prisoner of war cages, and everybody was looting. The Abyssinians were looting like mad because the Abyssinians had a very bad time from the Italians, I think we captured a wine store, a lovely Italian red wine, which was distributed amongst, I'm not sure, I think we got about two bottles a man, a white rank, that is, amongst the, certainly amongst the brigade, and it may have been amongst the division. I honestly don't know, but I know it was a very nice treat to have a couple of bottles of wine after what we'd, the filth that we'd been through. We hadn't been, as I say, only done, had one battle, if you could call it a battle, up to that time. But the living conditions had been dreadful.
What type of things did the Africans get? You said various bogus things.
I don't know. They get a scarf or something like that, or something not very interesting from a European's point of view, and perhaps get cooking pots and things like that, which, of course, are valuable to the Africans and valuable to us as well. But nothing of value, like jewellery or anything like that.
Why do you say that the Abyssinians were so bad?
Well, to my mind, they're a very cruel race, and they had every right to be cruel to the Italians, who'd used gas on them in the Abyssinian War, if you remember. But they had dispiriting habits with prisoners of war. Do you want me to tell you what they were?
Yes, please.
Well, they'd castrate their prisoners, and when they were alive, and put their stuff, their testicles in the chap's mouth, and the British doctor said we can do nothing about that. They were fantastically cruel, and they would have done it with us if they got us. That's why we always went armed with an armed party, and we were quite prepared to shoot our allies. And of course, the other thing which we suffered from later on was they are full of VD of all kinds. This was from our British doctors who told us this. They said they really didn't know how they could breed. They were so full of it. Well, that caused us a lot of trouble later on. But they weren't the Africans that we. They weren't the kind of Africans that well disciplined like our chaps were. The Tanganyikans, the Nyasas, and the Kenya Africans. Absolutely first-class chaps.
Did you see any Italian prisoners who had been ill-treated by the Abyssinians?
No, they'd be dead. They'd be dead. That was the normal form. They used to try to surround... Well, I'll tell you that a bit later on, when we come to... later on, what they did. They tried to surrender to the British ranks.
How long were you in Addis Ababa?
Oh dear. I can't remember. It was decided that a lot of the Italians had retreated south into the Abyssinian Lakes District, which is a very beautiful part of Abyssinia, not unlike our own Lakes District, with magnificent birds and so on and so forth. And some had retreated north, and eventually finished up in Gondar, and the 22nd East African Brigade was sent to deal with the Italians who'd retreated south. What the future they thought they got in it, I don't know. But anyhow, we were sent to follow them, which we did. I can't remember very much about this. I remember this peculiar name of Shashamana, where we didn't have a battle, which we should have done, or something. I don't know. And the 5th KR had a battle at a place called Fiki, which they did very well. And we pressed on to Kalito, which is the highlight, as far as I'm concerned, of my army career, because we were on the 18th of May. It was our sergeant major, our English, our white sergeant major's birthday. He was a Southern Rhodesian. He'd got an MM in British Somaliland, and hell of a good bloke, and we celebrated this. We got some whiskey from somewhere, and we sat round in the rain. The rains had started then. Sat round in the rain, eating neat cheese, tin cheese, and drinking whiskey. And the order was, we changed our company commander by that time. Ted Onslow had taken over from George Robson, who'd been sent back to the base. And that was common practice, and no reflection on George Robson. The regular soldiers, they didn't want to lose them all in battle, so they sent them back to train other Africans. And George had gone back to Dar es Salaam, and Ted Onslow, his second in command, had taken over. And we were on the 18th of May. We were told to sleep in our platoon areas, and I thought, to hell with that. I'm going to sleep in the dry under. We had small 30-100 weight lorries. And I slept with my British platoon sergeant under this lorry, and woke up the next morning and there wasn't a soul about. And of course what had happened was that they'd got it, told us to move during the night. Of course nobody could find us. So I thought I was in for another first class rocket. And I saw one of the officers, a chap named Jackson, coming back for something or other, and I said, where is the CO anywhere about? And he said, good God, Thorn, you're in for it. He said, everybody's been looking for you. So I kept to the just off the track, so I didn't meet anybody, and caught up with the company. So I thought, I said to this chap, Dawson, my sergeant, I said, look, this is my responsibility. I ordered you to sleep under this, so I said I should most likely be court-martialed. So I went up to Ted Onslow, gave him a hell of a salute, and said, I'm very sorry I'm late, sir. And the whole of my platoon were roaring with laughter. They thought it was frightfully funny, because the Africans liked that. They enjoyed a joke like that. And he said, well, I'll see you later. You better join your platoon. So that was that. Then we pressed on down this road. I think yes, we were marching down this road to the Balati River, where there was a bridge blown over the Balati River at this village Kalito. Now I don't even know, but there are four at that time. There were four platoons in a company, in a rifle company. A company was 5, 6, 7, 8, and I was the platoon commander for 8 platoon, and I always followed 5. You see, we always advanced in square formation, and I never bothered. I was that kind of bloke. And we got shelled, and we disappeared into the Indian corn at the side of the road, and then there was an O group. Colin Blackton held his O group, and Ted Onslow came back and said, right, we'll move on a compass bearing. 2 platoons are going to cross the river here. I wasn't taking very much notice on the bearing is such and such a thing. And we'll move in the order 8765. I said, good God, Ted, what was that bearing you gave us? Because I was going to be the leading platoon commander, you see. Well, he gave me the bearing again. The idea was that we crossed the river, 2 platoons on one side. It's a damn silly plan, actually. 2 platoons on one side and 2 platoons on the other side to give covering fire. Well, it was a pretty silly idea, because it wasn't bush such as the Somali bush. It was pretty thick, kind of, not jungle as such, but great big kind of bush trees, rather like these trees out here, and in much thicker, and tremendous ant hills going up to 12, 15 feet, which the Italians had made into machine gun posts. Good shelter for them, and jolly good camouflage as well. Well, we advanced down this, so we don't, by that time, the platoon strength was down to 15 Africans because of the inefficiencies of the base. They never got any, reinforcements up to you. You lost a few chaps through dysentery and things like that. And that left me only with three African riflemen. So they came, I was just behind them, they came to this water and they didn't like the look of it. And I didn't like the look of it either, so I thought, well, somebody's got to get across it, you've got to carry out your orders, get to the other side. So I dived in, and I'm not very tall, and more or less disappeared from view. It wasn't very, it was fairly narrow, but fairly fast flowing, and I got to the other side. My Africans followed me, and my platoon sergeant had the sense to make a kind of human bridge across. We got up and got the other side, and we weren't being fired on at that time, thank God we weren't. We took up a position, and he had the sense to make a human chain to get the Lewis guns across and get them across dry, and as many grenades as we could dry, because we were soaking wet by that time. I think it made a difference to me later on. Well, I had been ordered to get across and turn left and take up a position on the far side of this bridge that had been blown, and those were my orders. We couldn't see anybody because the bush was very thick, and somebody opened up on us from we passed a thing, we didn't know it was there, and they opened up on us, and of course then my reaction was to fall flat on my face, which I did, and so did my Africans. And a rather amusing thing happened. I thought, my God, I've been hit. I could feel something cold trickling down my right leg. My water bottle cork had come undone. And so we silenced that one. This platoon sergeant was jolly good. We silenced it. I don't know how we silenced it. Then we went on to the next machine gun post. And I said, all right, chaps. And I threw my grenade in. Of course, I forgot that my grenades were all the... detonators were soaking wet. They didn't come off. It didn't go off. So my two Africans with me, they're very keen on their drill, and they did as if they were on parade. Right, fire! Prepare to fire! Fire! And these Italians, one of them came out with his hands up. The others didn't come out at all. But they stood right in the middle of to be ready to be fired on by the Italians, showing fantastic bravery. Then we moved on a bit further. Still, we're going down the far bank of the river, and we turn left, if you see what I mean. And I threw a grenade, which again didn't go off, at an Italian car that I saw disappearing into the bush. And then everything opened up, and it was our own mortars under my very good friend John Pollard, who may be on your list. He was a lecturer at Bangor University, just retired actually, I saw him a month ago. And he was more or less firing by guesswork, I think. He'd seen some chaps on the other side, so he opened up on them. It was us. And I thought, well, this is not funny. We're being fired at from all sides. I'm going to consolidate this in this very large bush kind of thing, and wait until somebody else comes up, because there was an open space in front of us, and we were being fired at, as far as I could see, from our own mortars and from both sides, and we weren't strong enough to do anything about it. And I thought, well, open space, yes, I better get across it and get to the other side. So I said, come on, and you know what, whatever you do say in the battle. And I found myself advancing with my pistol, and not a soul in sight, no enemy in sight, and I had the whole of Africa to myself. They hadn't heard me, because there was the din going on, you see. So I came back again to this bush, and we'd got two prisoners by that time. I was awfully pleased getting two prisoners. I thought what a fantastic story it would make. I didn't know what to do. They'd only got one platoon across, which was mine, and the rest didn't come across for some good reason. So I thought, we've got to get on. So I had to send somebody back. So I sent my platoon sergeant, Sergeant Rose, back to the company commander and anybody else he could find to see if he could find a bigger crossing and cross and bring the rest of A Company and C Company across, because C Company is due to follow us. And C Company at that time was commanded by this chap, Roger Swinnerton, who is now Sir Roger Swinnerton. He did exactly that. And the second in command, the chap named Major, I don't know why he was called Lucifield, but he was. He was an absolute grand bloke. First class regular officer. He was the second in command. Next thing I knew, I was getting blown out of the water by him saying, "What the hell are you doing here, staying here?" And one thing, he said, "We're just going in with the Bennett." And I said, "Right, I've been fired at from all sides, including our own blasted mortars." He said, "Well, come on, get moving," and so on. Which we did, and they lined up C and A companies in line and went in with a bayonet and a hearty British cheer. Fantastic. And I went in with them, and the Italians popped out of every blinking bush. They'd been surrounded, and we took prisoners, and the Africans slung their rifles. They much prefer their pangas. A panga's a matchet. And the frightfully blunt, not like the Indian kukri. They use it for chopping wood and so on and so forth. And they were chopping Italians' heads off, and they were begging to surrender to me. And I was absolutely surrounded by Italians and so on and so forth. And anybody who didn't, any machine gun post that didn't surrender, we just put a burst in or whatever there was. I mean, you don't bother about that. There were so many people milling about. I was scared stiff. That somebody put a bullet through me after I'd passed them, but anyhow they didn't, as you can see. Well, we came to this road, and I thought, good, I've done my, what I was told to do is to take up a position on this road. And I, just as we got there, there's an awful lot of milling about, and you know, people disorganised and one thing and another, and somebody started firing at us from the left of the road. And I said to whoever it was there, I've forgotten who it was now, all right, I'll go and get him. You see, now, when I tell you, it's most unusual for this, that I'd already fired 36 rounds of 3.8 ammunition, because an officer never normally fires at all. And I saw this bloke and fired at him, click. I've got an empty cylinder. And he got me. He shot me in the hip, and I, just as I was, he saw me. There was one of these lovely anthills, and I moved to the left. Otherwise, he'd have shot me right through the lower part of the stomach, through the genitals. There's no doubt about that. And now they got me through the hip, I fell over past the. Because of a bullet at close range is going at a fantastic pace and it knocks you over, and I fell over, and in some way I found myself facing three Italians at a distance of about, I can't remember, but not much further than that pillar away, who were saying to them, I didn't know any Italian, look, shall we finish him off, he's wounded, we can finish him off, you see. And found myself facing three Italians ready to finish me off. As they could see, I'd been wounded. And I must make no bones about it. I prayed to God. And I had the sense, because I was unarmed, to pull out my magnetic compass, which, as you know, has got a ring on it, which looks like a grenade. And I held them in the throwing position for a moment, and they spotted that, but meanwhile I'd picked up a bit of earth and held that. And thank God one of my askaris came up and said, shall I kill them? I said, no, take them away. Then, because I was bleeding like a the proverbial stuck pig, and couldn't walk at all. And the platoon were right up with me, and I said to my African platoon sergeant, a corporal, a first class chap,